Fermented food and drink appear to be on a big upswing in our society. Just look at the things like kombucha growler fill stations appearing at supermarkets, or the growth of websites giving instructions on how to make sauerkraut and other fermented delicacies. Our final guest today has been at this for a while. Sandor Katz is something of a fermentation guru, giving talks and workshops all over the country. He's written a couple of books about fermented foods and been featured in the New Yorker and the New York Times mini-documentary. He'll speak at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference in Eugene on Friday night. Sandor Katz, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks so much for having me.
What got you fermenting in the first place?
Well, I mean, I would say that there were a few stages in the development of my interest in fermentation. I mean, the first was as a kid growing up in New York City, I loved sour pickles. And, you know, I was just drawn for reasons I couldn't possibly explain to the distinctive lactic acid flavor of these pickles. When I was in my mid-20s, I followed a macrobiotic diet for a couple of months, and macrobiotics emphasizes the digestive stimulation of pickles and other live ferments. And I noticed that these beloved pickles that I had loved all my life actually made my salivary glands squirt out saliva. So I started associating these foods with getting my digestive juices flowing. But what really got me doing it myself was 22 years ago, I moved from New York City to rural Tennessee and got involved in keeping a garden. And the first season I was gardening, we had a row of cabbage and, you know, didn't know what to do with it all at once. And I decided to learn how to make sauerkraut. And then, you know, I've just been experimenting with fermentation and deriving practical benefits from fermentation ever since.
Was there any hesitation about that first batch of sauerkraut? I mean, things can go wrong with microorganisms, can't they?
Well, I mean, as a matter of fact, in the realm of fermenting vegetables, according to the USDA, there has never been one single case of food poisoning or illness from fermented vegetables.
Really?
Sure. I mean, you know, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, this is why people are afraid of fermentation, is that we've been indoctrinated to believe that, you know, microorganisms are so potentially dangerous. And, you know, without denying that there are microorganisms that are dangerous, you know, when we look at our own bodies, our bodily cells are outnumbered by microorganisms that we're host to. And it turns out that rather than threatening us in any way, these microorganisms actually protect us you know, give us much of our functionality, and we couldn't possibly exist in the world without these bacteria. And when we eat, you know, bacterially rich foods, what we're doing is enriching the bacterial environment. We're building biodiversity inside our bodies.
So was there some real learning moments for you early in the fermenting experience?
Well, sure. I mean, I would say that the learning moments haven't ended. I mean, fermentation has been this amazing, you know, path of, you know, discovery and continual learning for me. I mean, as much as one third of all the foods and beverages that human beings put into our mouths is transformed by fermentation before we eat them. So, you know, there's a vast amount of, you know, distinctive techniques that people have, you know, worked out in different parts of the world, you know, to practice this incredible art. So, I mean, my learning curve continues, and I can't really point to, you know, sort of one moment that was an aha moment, you know, beyond that first batch of sauerkraut where I just learned how utterly simple it is to ferment food yourself. And over the years, I got involved in trying to demystify the process for other people because I learned that a lot of people project this, you know, fear of bacteria that we've been indoctrinated with, you know, onto these, you know, simple fermented foods that have always been strategies for food safety. So there's a tendency for people to project this fear, you know, even when there is no, you know, rational basis for it.
I think you might have hit the key there. For, I mean, essentially, is fermenting helping the food digest before it gets into us?
Sure. I mean, that's one way of thinking of fermentation, is a form of predigestion where, nutrients get broken down into simpler forms that are generally easier for us to digest. So, for instance, soybeans, the plant food with the most concentrated protein, our human bodies are not capable of extracting the protein from an unfermented mature soybean. So you never really hear about people sitting down and having, a cooked bowl of soybeans for dinner. And the Asian cultures that pioneered soy agriculture developed all of these different ways of fermenting the soybeans into soy sauce, miso, natto, tempeh, many other variations on these themes. Very distinctive foods, but what they all have in common is that dense protein that's so difficult for us to access gets broken down into amino acids, the building blocks of proteins. That's pre-digestion. Same thing with milk, that so many people have a hard time digesting, the milk sugar, lactose. When you ferment milk, the lactose is transformed into lactic acid, which people have a much easier time accessing. Even the gluten in wheat and other grains gets broken down, not by yeast, but by a bacterial fermentation, such as you find in a sourdough bread.
So is most of the stuff you eat now, Sandor, is it fermented?
Oh, I mean, I have a varied diet, and, I got into fermentation through having a garden, and I promise you I don't ferment everything in the garden before I eat it. I eat a varied diet. I would recommend a varied diet to anyone, but fermentation has an important place in a varied diet. It doesn't mean you shouldn't eat unfermented foods. I mean, eating fresh, fruits and vegetables in their season is a wonderful thing, but fermentation is a really practical way of, preserving perishable foods so that we can eat them later, whether it's, vegetables out of the garden, turning them into sauerkraut and kimchi is a strategy for preserving them, or whether we're talking about milk. I mean, people who grew up in the 20th and 21st centuries can't even imagine what you would do with milk without a refrigerator. Well, people throughout time have drunk soured milk, and that's what yogurt and kefir and really even cheeses are fermented forms of milk. So, fermentation has an important place in our diet, particularly at this moment when, we're all exposed to chemicals that diminish biodiversity in our guts, and live culture ferments are a great way of, reintroducing, rebuilding biodiversity. But I would never tell people that they should eat only fermented foods or primarily fermented foods. Variety is the name of the game.
Sandor Katz is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a fermentation expert. He'll speak at the Public Interest Environmental Law Conference in Eugene Friday night. When we talk about the things that we used to do with certain foods, I mean, it seems like in some ways fermenting is a lost art. And you have some opinions you've stated before about the general state of American food. I mean, it seems like it's too clean, too processed from your perspective.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, I think that, I think, sort of stopping shopping at the supermarket, patronizing local farms, buying less processed foods, getting involved in and transforming foods ourselves in our kitchens are really, really important acts. For health, for, the health of the soil, for the health of the economy, for lots of different reasons. And so my emphasis has certainly been on do-it-yourself fermentation because, these are, simple, straightforward processes that people have been doing, in their communities and in their kitchens since time immemorial. And it's only through sort of the centralization of food and, people... losing their connection to the production of food that we have, become so utterly dependent on, food mass production, which has a huge downside. So I think that, as people are seeking to become more connected to the food that they eat, fermentation is just sort of a huge aspect of that. And people have always loved fermented foods. It's not that interest in fermented foods is sudden or new. I mean, I don't think that beer or cheese or cured meats or wine or beer or chocolate, you know, or many of the other myriad fermented foods, you know, are suddenly becoming popular because they have never, ever waned in popularity. But what's shifting now is that as people are interrogating their food and becoming more interested in how is this food produced, where did it come from, you know, once you start asking questions like that, fermentation is always part of the answer.
That's a great phrase, interrogating their food. She left the line. Jeannie in Medford had some perspective on women craving pickle juice when pregnant. Is that something that you've investigated further?
Well, I mean, I've heard of that. I've never heard of any sort of, you know, formal investigation of that. But, you know, pickle juice, particularly the brine of live culture pickles, is, you know, incredibly nutritious and incredibly, you know, dense with, you know, beneficial probiotic bacteria. So I think, you know, for anyone, whether you're pregnant or not, you know, a little sip of pickle juice is a great way. You know, in Russian cuisine, they actually use pickled brine as the base for different kinds of soups, including a cold summer soup called okroshka, which is just incredibly delicious. But sip at your pickle brine for sure.
Here's a question from Chris in Eugene. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Sandor Katz.
Hi. After the Fukushima incident, I heard that miso helps the body eradicate radiation. Is this true? What do you know about this?
Well, I know that this is, I have heard this before. There was anecdotal evidence after, you know, the nuclear bombings in Japan that, you know, in a clinic in, I believe, Nagasaki, the doctors and staff observed that they weren't experiencing any of the radiation sickness, and they associated this with eating miso. So this observation has been made over the course of more than 50 years. You know, when I've tried to seek out, any kind of structured scientific research trying to verify this or trying to understand what the mechanism of protection is, I haven't been able to find any. So, you know, this is not an idea that you know, I am broadcasting, but I certainly have heard it, and it's not a new idea. And I would say, in the case of a question like that, it certainly can't hurt. You know, the other thing that's commonly found in miso soup that is thought to bind with heavy metals and remove them from the body is seaweed. So, you know, in the context of this sort of a huge concern that we have, you know, and in the absence of scientific verification, it certainly can't hurt to eat some miso, and it's very possible that it could help.
I went back and looked at that New Yorker piece from nearly 6 years ago about fermented foods, and I remarked about the fact that the author noted the complexions didn't always look good on some of the people he was talking to, but he remarked that you particularly look very healthy. You've also mentioned that you are HIV positive. Do you think fermentation has a lot to do with your overall health?
Yeah, sure. I think fermentation has a lot to do with anyone. It can potentially help anybody's health. I mean, I take HIV meds. I don't want anyone, you know, to have the impression that I'm claiming that eating fermented foods is a, you know, cure for HIV or anything like that. But I would say that, you know, foods that can, you know, foods with live cultures, which isn't all fermented foods, it's foods that have fermented foods that have not been cooked or heated after their fermentation. But live culture foods have the potential to improve digestion, improve nutrient assimilation, improve overall immune function, and potentially to improve mental health. And I think all of us can benefit from that. And I don't think it's reasonable for us to expect that, you know, introducing particular foods into our diet is going to sort of cure diseases for us. Could happen, but it's not a reasonable expectation. But I think that anybody can benefit from incorporating live culture fermented foods into their diets.
Sander, just a minute left. Can you give us a sauerkraut starter set? I remember it seemed really simple when I read about it.
Yeah, first of all, let me just mention that I'm doing another workshop also while I'm in Eugene, Sunday the 6th from 4 to 7, organized by Friends of Family Farmers. You can find it on my website, which is wildfermentation.com. But to ferment vegetables, all you need to do is chop or grate them, create surface area, lightly salt them. There's no magic number of salt. You know, start light. You can always add more salt to taste. It's harder to subtract it. The salt will start pulling juice out of the vegetables, then get in and squeeze hard with your hands or pound with some sort of a blunt tool, and this will bruise the vegetables and help more juice come out of them. And then once they're nice and juicy, stuff them into a jar. Each pound of vegetables will fill about a pint, 2 pounds for a quart. Just stuff them into a jar with some force so the vegetables are submerged, and then they can ferment once they're submerged for 3 days, 3 weeks, 3 months, as you like it. They will get more acidic as time passes, but it's as easy as that.
Surface area salt, and then beat them up a bit before you stick them in a jar. Okay, thanks, Sander Katz, for the brief lesson here. Sander Katz will be at the Environmental Law Conference in Eugene on Friday night, and then Sunday 4 to 7 at that session, the workshop sponsored by Friends of Family Farms. Sander Katz, thanks for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thanks for having me.
All right, take care.